It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Tom Wolf says he's ready to roll up his sleeves and get to work after defeating incumbent Tom Corbett to become Pennsylvania's new governor. Wolf beat Corbett 55% to 45. It's the first time in Pennsylvania's modern history that a sitting governor has not won re-election. I'm joined now by phone from Philadelphia by Philadelphia Daily News columnist John Baer to talk about what Tom Wolf's win means for the future of Pennsylvania and the problems his administration will have to face. Good day, John.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
I'm well. In fact, I'm so well that it doesn't feel as much like morning to me because it is, in fact, afternoon. But
You're right.
It's all right, John. Did you get any sleep?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, as you know, it was an early night for anybody that was looking at who was going to win the governor's race. So it wasn't too bad for an election night.
Where were you headquartered last night?
I was in York, PA last night at the Wolf celebration. I just thought it would be important to be there for a piece of history because there wasn't a lot of doubt going in. So I got myself to York and enjoyed the Wolf party.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a question, though, about does anybody know how to party anymore in politics, or at least in this state? Because I looked in on the live shot on the television news at 11 from Wolf headquarters, and the place was empty.
Well, it filled up. They opened the doors to the public at about 8 o'clock, and between 8 and 10, it was pretty crowded and you know, pretty rocking. But I mean, this is York County. A lot of people have jobs that they get to early in the morning, and I think after several hours, they had had enough and kind of went home.
So, at a cost of $73 million and counting, this race broke Pennsylvania's campaign spending record. The governor's race alone. One of the panelists involved in our coverage last night, a Republican, suggested that Wolf bought the election. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, anytime a self-financing candidate is involved in any sort of race, that's always the accusation. And you know, you cannot discount the fact that he gave his campaign $10 million in the primary and has contributed some money since. There's no question that's a big advantage, but money alone can't do it. I mean, he did deliver a message that was apparently very receptive, obviously very receptive among Pennsylvania voters. So, yeah, money is a big factor. I'd put it as the number one factor for the reason that he's the governor-elect.
Is this more about what Tom Wolf did to win or more about what Tom Corbett did to mess up his reelection, which hasn't happened to a sitting governor in over four decades in this state?
Yeah. It's the latter. This was a vote more against Corbett than for Wolf. I don't think there's any question about that. And in terms of the history of the state, there's never been a sitting governor who's been outed. But more than that, I mean, the cycle of electing someone from a different party every 8 years goes way back. It goes back 68 years, well past the time in the 70s when our Constitution was amended to allow governors to serve two terms. So this really is a huge break in the electoral history of the state, and it did have more to do with Corbett than with Wolf.
Let's listen to a little of what Corbett had to say in his concession speech last night.
When I made those promises, I said I was going to do what is right for Pennsylvania, the tough decision, and people may not like it. Well, obviously, they didn't like it. I said I may be a one-term governor. And I am. But I am proud of what we did, what we all did.
So the spin that the Corbett administration is putting on this is that I did what I was elected to do. I made the tough decisions, and they weren't always popular, and I'm suffering for that.
And there's some truth to that. Look, there are a lot of people in the state. I mean, a lot of them voted for Tom Corbett yesterday who believe government's role should be limited to keeping spending down and keeping taxes down. A majority, however, as was clear by last night's results, don't believe that. So, he's talking to his own audience, and his own audience certainly is proud of what he does, still supports him, and wishes he could be back to do the same thing for four more years.
And were there other mistakes that Tom Corbett might have made in terms of the campaign strategy, other than campaigning with Chris Christie over the weekend?
I really don't think so, Paul. I mean, I think that the Corbett narrative was defined headed into this year, let alone this campaign. He began the year as the most vulnerable incumbent in America, and he ended last night as the most vulnerable incumbent in America. There were, I think, 18 Republican governors whose jobs were on the line last night, and he's the only one who lost his. His numbers have never been good since year one in office. It was Tom Wolf's great advantage that he was running against a Republican who was so unpopular in his own state in a year that Republicans nationally just cleaned house.
Right. I just saw the statistic that the Republicans, the GOP, now has its largest majority in the House since World War II. We're talking with John Baer. He is a Philadelphia Daily News political columnist on the phone with us from Philadelphia. He covered Tom Wolf's appearance last night. He was headquartered with him in New York, where they were partying early, and the party ended early. Perhaps they felt like they needed to get some sleep to get ready to do the work, which we'll address in terms of the challenges that lie ahead for Tom Wolf. But in terms of the political aspects of this and really sort of the extraordinary aspects of Wolf's victory, he was one of the few Democrats in America running for office who didn't avoid President Obama like the plague, showing up with President Obama in Philadelphia within the last week.
Sure, but that's the only place in Pennsylvania that he could show up with the president. The president's popularity in Philadelphia remains very high, and Tom Wolf took advantage of that, and President Obama took advantage of it. Why not stand with maybe the only winner in the nation in terms of the Democratic Party other than the state of New Hampshire? You use every tool that you can. President Clinton spoke out in Pittsburgh on behalf of Tom Wolf. Michelle Obama came to Philadelphia, as did Hillary Clinton, and, of course, as you said, the president.
What does it say about Pennsylvania that we bucked this national Republican landslide?
Well, I mean, every election is determined by the individual candidates, and the individual candidates in this election drew such a stark contrast. This was not about President Obama in Pennsylvania for a majority of voters. This was about Tom Corbett. It was a referendum on Tom Corbett. And when people said, well, we don't know Tom Wolf, he doesn't seem to be offering many specifics in what he wanted to do, it just didn't matter. There were so many factors, schools, Penn State, legislative flops. He angered the left by public gaffes that embarrassed women, embarrassed Latinos, embarrassed the unemployed. He angered the right by not being able to get the state stores privatized or the pensions resolved or voter IDs. So there was very little place for him to draw enough support to, get over that 50% mark, and he didn't.
A year ago, would you have predicted that Tom Wolf would have been the Democratic nominee, let alone be the governor?
A year ago, Tom Wolf was showing a 2% in the polls. So no one in their right mind would have predicted that. But by February, after his initial ads had been on television for a little bit, there was a sense that this guy was the real deal and had the money to back it up. And because, again, Corbett, again, at the beginning of the year, Corbett was already in a bad position. If Tom Wolf emerged, it seemed pretty clear to a lot of Democratic insiders that he could win.
And he has. And let's listen to a little of Tom Wolf's victory speech last night. In this little segment that we're going to play for you, he talks about growing Pennsylvania's economy.
We need to invest strategically in the things that Pennsylvania that will make Pennsylvania's economy grow. We want to be a magnet for entrepreneurs.
So he wants to grow the economy, and what about his approach? Do you think that he has ideas that are resonating with people even at these early stages, John?
Well, we're going to see. I mean, I think there's a broad public support for his proposal to impose a severance tax on the natural gas drilling industry, an extraction tax. Whether or not there's legislative support remains to be seen. As Mark mentioned at the head in the news broadcast part, both the House and the Senate in Pennsylvania have Republican gains, and so their majorities are even stronger starting in January than they are today. And those Republican majorities are averse to taxes of any kind. The only thing that could save Wolf on that issue is Pennsylvania, again, is looking at a huge budget deficit in 2015. There may be some way to coax and cajole a 5% or less severance tax out of the legislature. If that happens, then Wolf will be able to meet some of his campaign promises in terms of more money for schools. But look, I mean, it's going to be a very tough row for him to walk, because while he has shattered the Pennsylvania's electoral history, Pennsylvania's partisan history might be a little bit tougher to break.
What are some of the other challenges that Wolf faces? And, you know, there's a deficit. There is the pension issue. There are a lot of problems that he is inheriting from Governor Corbett. You know, how does he even begin to try to make headway on these issues?
Well, we're going to find out if his business experience can translate into political effectiveness. That's not always the case, but it will be very interesting to see. I mean, this is the first governor since Milton Schapp who came out of the business community. And Milton Schapp, of course, a cable TV giant in the early days of cable, came to Harrisburg without a lot of political background and was able to get some things done. So we'll see if Wolf is able to do that. It's going to be very interesting to watch. But he does, as you say, face a number of challenges, and the largest ones will be political in dealing with large majorities of Republicans in both the House and the Senate.
And we're going to need more specifics from him. Wolf had been, at least on the campaign trail, reluctant to share specifics of his plan to change the income tax structure. And he was claiming that he couldn't be specific on who will pay more and who will pay less until he had a look at the books, until he got into the office and had access to information that he was telling people he was not privy to. Did you buy any of that, John? I mean, was that sort of playing politics there, avoiding the specifics? And, you know, at what point does he start to have to start articulating to people exactly what he plans to do?
Well, initially, that was a little bit of a campaign faux pas. I mean, when you're in a lead and holding a big lead, you don't need to talk about specifics at all. He probably shouldn't have even mentioned the income tax thing, because it's not on the high list of priorities that Pennsylvania voters were telling pollsters that they cared about. But having brought it up, then he had to sort of back it up. And he is right in the sense that data on tax revenue, tax collection, it lags. I mean, it's a year and a half behind, and so there are no current numbers. But he's disingenuous in saying that he couldn't get a little bit more specific in terms of, you know, what might be the levels at which people would pay more and people would pay less. When he was pushed hard, he got to a double income, two income family of over $180,000 a year that they would probably pay more in an income tax, and every other family below that would probably pay less. But look, the problem is this thing is like turning around an aircraft carrier. The tax system is very complex. We have a uniformity clause in our Constitution that requires all taxes to be assessed at the same levels. He says he thinks he can get around that legally. I say no matter what he tries, it's going to end up in litigation, and it's not something that's going to happen overnight.
Well, we'll have plenty of time to look at and analyze the policies and how Tom Wolf intends to implement them. But for now, in terms of the history that was made last night, technically, you'd have to say that his defeating a sitting governor was a first in modern Pennsylvania history. There was an incumbent governor who lost re-election back in 1855. It was William Bigler, but that was some 70 years before or close to it, before women were allowed to vote, and minorities in this country could vote. And I think there were even some laws about you had to own certain amounts of land if you wanted to vote, you know, that yeah. kind of thing. So, I mean, really, this is in many ways unprecedented. Put the perspective on it before we wrap this up, John, in terms of the history that was made last night.
Well, I mean, it is extraordinary. History would have been made either way. Had Corbett managed to survive, it would have been the biggest comeback in the history of Pennsylvania politics. The fact that Wolf came literally out of nowhere on the political scene and pulled off this historic win, we've just never seen anything like it. I have personally never covered a candidate who, as you said, a year ago was on nobody's screen and was in the polls at 2%. Never covered a candidate who has risen as fast and gone as far as Tom Wolf did in this past election cycle, culminating in his win last night. And Paul, the irony is the size of the win, the 54-45 margin, is exactly the size of the margin that Tom Corbett won by 4 years ago.
Philadelphia Daily News columnist John Baer talking about Tom Wolf's victory. He is the governor-elect of Pennsylvania, will take office in 2015. John, as always, a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for sharing your insights today.
Paul, thanks for having me.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In case you haven't heard, Pennsylvania will have a new governor in 2015 after Democrat Tom Wolf defeated incumbent Republican Tom Corbett in yesterday's general election. But other than the new man at the top, not much is going to change in Harrisburg and beyond for Pennsylvania office holders. Joining us to parse through the non-gubernatorial election results is 90.5 WESA senior news editor Mark Neutbar. Mark, welcome back. I know it was a short night for you. Thanks for taking time to join us here on the program.
Glad to be here as always, Paul.
The state legislature is going to be controlled by Republicans still. But the margin has increased in both the House and the Senate in Harrisburg.
The top line numbers there in the state Senate, Republicans will have 30 seats. The Democrats will have 20. That's up 2 seats for the Republicans there. In the House, they are up to the Republicans, that is, are up to 119 seats to 84 for the Democrats. That's a pickup of 8 seats. So they're really solidifying their majority. Finish that conversation about the gubernatorial race. And this is either, you know, you can either look at this as how bad Tom Corbett was or just how successful the gerrymandering has been in the state of Pennsylvania. Because look at the gains that the Republican Party makes at the lower levels, and yet they had no coattails, they had no hope in this Republican gubernatorial election.
And, well, you know, as you look at that particular aspect of the election yesterday, due to redistricting, Western Pennsylvania has lost representation. What does that mean for the region when it comes to getting issues important to our area addressed?
Yeah, I think Western Pennsylvania has never been as cohesive as Southeastern Pennsylvania, as the Philadelphia area, partially because just the size of Philadelphia, also the fact that it's a city and county combined, where we have the city of Pittsburgh, then we have Allegheny County, and then you have all of the collar counties surrounding it. And it's just hard to get all of these lawmakers to really get on one agenda. You know, what's good for Johnstown is not necessarily what's good for Greene County in southwestern Pennsylvania. So losing a seat doesn't help, that's for sure. When you start to look at some of the leadership, you have, you know, Mike Terzai, and he, of course, is from the North Hills. He is going to do what he can to try to rally the troops, but the Republicans don't always get along with the Democrats in the city. It's hard to say if we'll actually be a voting bloc here in southwestern Pennsylvania.
What were some of the races that stood out for you?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say one more thing, kind of going back to the gerrymandering as we Sure. set up those races. 60% of the state House races were uncontested. 60% of the time, people said, look, I cannot beat that Republican. I cannot beat that Democrat no matter what. So they didn't even – the other party didn't even try. And then another long list of just kind of token candidates. So that's something to keep in mind.
Well, yeah, you had a number of races, as you say, where candidates were running unopposed. I don't know how much out on a limb you want to go or how high you want to stand on your soapbox, but is this healthy for our democracy?
That's a really good question, Paul. I don't think so. I'd love to see a new way of drawing these districts. Other states do it in different ways. I'm not sure that their way is perfect either. But it just seems that, you know, you look at these districts and you see how convoluted the lines are. And yes, we want to make sure the communities stay together, but there has to be better ways to make these more compact so you don't have these snakes reaching off into the middle of the state, districts that look like hammerheads. It just doesn't make any sense.
And for that matter, I think the new – and we'll get into the U.S. House races here in just a little bit, but District 12 is kind of a result of that,
yeah.
Just gerrymandering.
Yeah, that's an absolutely absurd district. It doesn't make any sense from a map standpoint. From a political standpoint, it makes a whole lot of sense. Like you said, we'll get into that.
Right, but let's look at the state races and what were the ones that stood out for you.
In the 52nd district, this was a seat that the incumbent decided to move up and try for a Senate seat. And what wound up happening was the Republican Ron Warner picked up a seat there for the Republican Party. He was able to beat Andrew Bonney 53% to 47%. That's out in Fayette County in Westmoreland County. So that's one that was interesting. Another pickup for the Republican Party, Jesse White was the Democratic incumbent in the 46th district, and he fell to Jason Ortate 56% to 44%. Another one of the races that's always interesting to watch is the 20th district. That's a lot of the North Hills and into northern neighborhoods in the city of Pittsburgh. Adam Ravenstahl, who is the brother of Luke Ravenstahl, he seems to be able to just keep that machine running along despite not doing a whole heck of a lot in Harrisburg. He had Tom Foti running against him, and Adam Ravenstahl, the Democrat again, was able to pick up 61% of the vote. So those were some of the House races that we were definitely keeping an eye on last night.
So as we look at the makeup of the House and the Senate, it was controlled by the Republicans before. They have increased the margin of Republican seats to Democratic seats in the House and Senate in Harrisburg. What challenges does this pose for Tom Wolf? Does having an even greater ratio of Republicans to Democrats make it harder for him to – I mean, it was bad enough for a Republican governor right. With a Republican majority to get his legislative initiatives through. What's going to happen when a Democrat takes over?
Yeah, it is going to be very hard for Tom Wolf to get anything done that needs legislative approval. And in this state, just about everything does need legislative approval. So you're going to see him, I think, getting some legislation introduced. He'll be lucky if it even gets called in the committees. And if it does actually move in a committee when it comes to the floor for a full vote, I think you're just going to see those things get knocked down. Now, on the other hand, the Republicans are interested in some of the same issues that Tom Wolf is interested in, but they will be approaching it in a different manner, such as pensions. I'm sure that there is going to be an interest in pensions from both the governor's office and from the state legislature, the leadership there. But I think that the way that the solution is found is going to be very different. So you'll see these two competing pieces of legislation. As I said, the one that comes from the Democratic side might not even get called in committee, and it might just die due to lack of interest.
And so when the legislature is back in session, I mean, what are the priorities? Obviously, pension reform is one area that needs to be tackled. But what do you see the legislature taking up almost immediately?
Yeah, the pension one, as you mentioned, is going to be a top priority, I think, for everybody. Just kind of noodling around with the tax code in this state is going to be something that a lot of people are going to be looking at. We have that severance tax issue that Tom Wolf talked about throughout his entire campaign. It'll be interesting to see what the Republicans are willing to do. There was some traction among House and Senate Republicans to pass some sort of a severance tax. But now that the Republicans have picked up a few seats, maybe that will not fly. Looking at the idea of this income tax that Tom Wolf wants to change, that will not be easy. And then, of course, as John was mentioning earlier here in the show, there could be a legal fight brewing over all of that. So those types of issues on the taxing front, as well as property tax issues. Is property tax the right way to fund a school district? That's something that is going to be debated. But I don't see – I really think the next 2 years, we're going to see a whole bunch of inaction. Things just won't get done.
Boy, I can see some people just gnashing teeth over that notion. Going back to the whole issue of an extraction tax and how Tom Wolf can fund his education initiatives. Mm-hmm. That was a big part of his campaign, was saying we need to spend more on education. If he can't get the tax revenue increased, particularly from extraction taxes, where does he get the money to do what he wants to do?
That is a very good question. I don't think there are many places in this budget that there can be cuts that would be large enough to actually make an impact on education funding. So it probably is going to have to come from the revenue side. I'm sure somebody could tell me, you know, some pork here and something that can be trimmed there. Maybe the size of the state legislature. That's a good place to start to try to save some money. But he's going to have to figure out, where does he get this? I think that severance tax might get through, but like I said, with the new emboldened Republican Party in the House and the Senate, it might not be easy. I was just looking at some comments that were made by the leadership. Sam Smith in the House, he said, big government is not the answer to everything, and the people of Pennsylvania know it, and that is why they voted to strengthen the House Republican majority. Mike Terzai is saying that we have been fiscally and legislatively responsible. We have been stewards of taxpayers' hard-earned money. These are not people that are talking about raising taxes on anything.
Right, but the same people that went to the polls elected Tom Wolf governor, so they must right. want
I think what the Republicans
– they want some services, right?
Sure, and I think the Republican Party in their more quiet moments without the microphones on are saying, look, the people are supporting what we think is this good fiscal conservative standpoint. They just didn't like the governor. They just didn't like the governor, and so we don't have to worry about this mandate that Tom Wolf thinks he has with a nearly 10% victory.
We're talking with 90.5 WESA senior news editor Mark Neutbar, looking at the results of the election and some of the different races around the state that maybe haven't gotten as much attention as you would like, and certainly the governor's race and what happened last night overshadowing a lot of that. After looking at state races, let's turn our attention to what has happened at the federal level, the congressional races. No surprises. In fact, apparently no that all of the sitting congressmen and women in Pennsylvania have retained their seats.
Yeah, going into this, the Republicans had 13 of the 18 seats, and coming out of this, the Republicans have 13 of the 18 seats. Again, is that gerrymandering? One of the numbers that I'm going to have to crunch, I'm sorry that I didn't have time this morning to do it, but looking at how many Democratic votes were cast in all of the congressional districts and then comparing them to all of the Republican votes that were cast in all of the districts and finding out, because in the past, there have been more Democratic votes cast than Republican votes cast as you put those all together. But the way it was drawn, the close races are the close races and the wide open ones are the wide open ones.
So District 12 would be the one that would be of the greatest interest to our listening audience. And that had the Republican incumbent, Keith Rothfuss, going up against a Democratic challenger, Aaron McClellan, who seemed to be knowledgeable and dynamic, but in the end came up short. Talk about what happened there.
Well, that's a tough district. Just the number, first of all, Keith Rothfuss, 59%, Aaron McClellan, 41%. So Mr. Rothfuss had no problem in that one. There is a Democratic voter advantage in this district. There are more registered Democrats in that district than there are Republicans, yet it seems as though this is now just a solidly Republican district.
Well, was it a matter of not getting the turnout, which is difficult for the party in power, particularly in the midterm elections?
Right. Well, let's look back 2 years, which is not the midterm elections, but Bob Casey and President Obama both lost in this district. And as I said, it has the Democratic voter advantage. You need to be a very conservative Democrat if you want to move forward in this district, but you have to get out of a primary. We have contested primaries in that district year after – or 2 years after 2 years. So finding somebody who is pro-gun, and is watching out for the farmer, yet still is taking care of the suburban Pittsburgh voters. That is a hard person to find in the Democratic Party right now. And then getting that person through a primary is an even harder thing to do.
And who has the advantage in the 12th district then? Is it if there are more Democrats, you'd think it would be the Democrat, but it sounds like the interests of the people in that district, it tends to favor the Republican candidate.
I think that's exactly what we're looking at is the it's going to be a Republican district for some time.
And that's what the Republicans wanted when they restructured it.
Right, when they drew that. The way it takes in so much of the North Hills of Pittsburgh, which is pretty Republican, then picks up Johnstown and Somerset in there. It's an interesting district. The Pennsylvania 3rd district is an interesting one as well. Republican Mike Kelly took that one quite easily, 61% over Dan LaValle, 39%. Dan was a very fresh face to this. He's a young guy himself, but also he doesn't have a lot of political experience. Mike Kelly does, and he has a good machine working for him. But this is one that stretches all the way from Erie on down into the very north part of the Pittsburgh suburbs down into Cranberry area. And it's looking more and more like this is going to be a Republican seat on into the future as well. And it's seeming that nobody in the northern half of the district is even going to have a chance to be running for this. We're going to continue to see people from Crawford County and down.
90.5 WESA senior news editor Mark Neutbar looking through the election results that came in last night, an historic night, a busy night, a late night. And Mark, on short sleep, we appreciate you coming in to join us for this conversation and to share your insights on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me. It was a good time.
Coming up, is there a connection between yesterday's national elections and globalization?